Part 1, Flat Inspection Appointment. Good morning, Greenline Community Services. This is Anna speaking. How can I help?
Hello, I'm calling because I would like to arrange a flat inspection for damp marks in a bedroom. I saw the notice online, but I wanted to check the details before I book.
Of course.
For that request, you want the morning inspection slot. We also have advice tables, but the appointment gives you more time with a volunteer.
That sounds right.
I was worried I had chosen the wrong session because the website lists several different tables.
No problem.
First, can I take your full name, please?
Yes, it's Daniel Cho.
The surname is spelled C-A Cho.
Thank you.
I have you down as a tenant. Can I take a contact number in case the volunteer needs to change the time? The number is 7918402667. Let me repeat that because people sometimes mishear it. 7918402667. Great, I have 7918402667.
And the best email address.
Daniel Cho@example.com. Email is fine for the confirmation, but a phone call is better if anything changes on the day. We had places on 3 June, but that session filled this morning. There's one space on 4 June, although it's quite late in the day.
4 June is difficult for me.
Is there anything later in the month?
Yes, I can book you for 6 June at 9:45 a.m.
That's a quieter slot, so the volunteer should have time to look at the issue properly.
6 June at 9:45 a.m. works well.
Where exactly do I need to go?
I thought it was in the agency office.
It used to be there, but the room has changed. The appointment will be in flat 12B, Mill House, North Road. We'll put signs at the entrance as well.
Thanks for clarifying.
Is there a charge?
The basic booking fee is no charge.
Photographs should be ready on the tenant's phone in case the mark has changed.
That's clear.
What should I bring with me?
Please bring a copy of the tenancy agreement.
The session leader is Miss Brooks, and the confirmation email will include the same details.
Great.
If I can't attend, what should I do?
Please reply to the confirmation text by 8 o'clock that morning.
These appointments are popular, so early cancellation lets us offer the place to someone on the waiting list.
Understood.
So I'm booked for 6 June at 9:45 a.m. in flat 12B, Mill House, North Road, and I need to bring a copy of the tenancy agreement.
That's right.
You'll receive the confirmation within 10 minutes.
Is there anything else I can help with?
No, that's everything.
Thank you for your help.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.
That's the end of part 1. Part 2, Campus Health Fair.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Campus Health Fair. I'll explain the layout and the main changes before you start exploring. The first change is the venue. The event was originally advertised for the main gym, but it has moved to the new well-being center. Please use the south entrance. The other doors are for staff and deliveries only. When you arrive, go first to the welcome desk opposite the stairs. Even if you booked online, you need to collect a program and a small map because several locations changed yesterday. If you need general help, the information point is under the blue banner near reception. Refreshments are beside the quiet study lounge, and they'll be available for most of the day. Now picture the site as a long rectangle with the entrance behind you. On the left as you come in, the first area is for nutrition advice. If you continue along the left side towards the back, you'll reach sleep
and stress workshops. These areas are easy to confuse because both have volunteers in green shirts, so use the signs rather than the color of the shirts. On the right side, the first section is sports injury checks. Further along the right side, in the middle, you'll find vaccination information. At the back right, there's the reflection room at the back right. Please note this correction. Vaccination information is in the middle of the right side, not near reception. Some early programs printed the old position, so check the map you received today. A popular service today is the posture screening desk. It was listed as stand 9, but it has moved to stand 18. General guidance is available at stand 4. The staff there can help you choose which activities are most relevant if you have limited time. The opening hours have also changed. Publicity said 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., but today's correct hours are 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. There will be a short welcome talk at 10:30 a.m. Remember that screenings finish at 3:15 p.m., so don't leave that service until the very end. For practical arrangements, please bring student ID. If you complete stamps from 6 activity points, you can enter a draw to win a free sports massage voucher. The main demonstration has been moved to 2 p.m. because the morning setup took longer than expected. Finally, please move slowly through the narrow sections and leave the quiet area for people who need a break from the crowd. If you're unsure where to go, return to the information point rather than asking staff who are running demonstrations. Enjoy campus health fair and make sure you keep the updated program with you. That's the end of part 2. Part 3, research project on student sleep. Come in, Laura and Benz. I have read your proposal on the relationship between student sleep routines and concentration in seminars. The topic is promising, but the method still needs tightening before you collect more data. That's exactly where we're stuck. I think we should focus on keeping 1 week sleep diaries with a small group of volunteers because it gives us detailed comments and examples. I understand that, but I'm worried the sample will be too small. I would rather collect broader data by collecting a wider online survey from first-year students. Both of you are partly right. I suggest using diaries to design a focus survey. The smaller method can show you what to ask, while the wider method can test whether those themes appear beyond a few people. My concern is time. If we do both, we might not finish the analysis properly. Then divide the work clearly. Laura will organize and summarize the diaries, and Ben will build the survey and charts. Don't both try to do every stage, or you'll duplicate effort and still feel behind. That split is fair, but I'm not sure what to include in the background section. We have too many articles. Start with a meta-analysis by Huang and Carter. It summarizes the field and will help you select only the studies that connect directly to your research question. What about variables that might affect the result? We discussed some, but we have not listed them in the method. You need to control for course year, paid work hours, and caffeine intake. If you ignore those, your results may look clearer than they really are. I can add those to the survey. I'll also follow your advice to avoid asking students to diagnose themselves and focus on observable routines. Good. Piloting will show whether the wording is clear and whether people understand the scale in the same way. We also need to talk about deadlines. The current final deadline is coming too quickly. The original deadline was 18 March. The department will allow an extension to 25 March, but you must request it by 15 March. That helps, but you still need to see something before the final version, don't you?
Yes.
Send me a substantial draft by 20 March. It should include the introduction, method, and at least some early analysis. Could we meet again before that? I would like feedback on the interview coding. Let's meet on Friday, the 14th. Bring one coded interview extract and the survey draft, even if they aren't perfect. Should we change the research question to make it easier? Don't change the central question yet. Narrow the evidence instead. A focused mixed methods project is better than a broad project with shallow data. That makes sense. I'll keep the interviews focused on examples, not general opinions. And I'll make the survey shorter so people actually finish it.
Exactly.
Your aim isn't to collect the maximum amount of data. It's to collect data that answers your question clearly. That's the end of part 3. Part 4, lecture on indoor air quality.
Good morning.
Today's lecture is about indoor air quality in shared housing. This subject matters because of the amount of time people spend indoors combined with tighter building insulation. In many discussions, it's treated as a technical issue, but it also affects behavior, cost, planning, and public expectations. A useful term here's ventilation behavior. By this, I mean the everyday choices people make about windows, fans, drying clothes, and airflow. The definition is important because it moves us away from thinking about one isolated product or site and towards a system of decisions. One sector where this is visible is public health housing policy. In that sector, small choices often accumulate. A single decision may not seem significant, but repeated across a campus, workplace, or city, it changes cost, risk, and the experience of people using the space. Evidence is developing. For example, a housing survey found lower reported headaches in flats with working extractor fans and regular window opening. This doesn't prove that every intervention will work everywhere, but it shows that carefully designed changes can produce measurable benefits when they fit the local context. There are limitations. Residents can't solve structural damp or faulty ventilation through behavior alone. This point is often missed in public debate. People like simple solutions, but environmental and social systems rarely respond to one action on its own. The main barrier is worries about heating costs during cold months. Even when the evidence is persuasive, organizations have budgets, habits, and competing priorities. That's why implementation often depends on leadership as much as on technical knowledge. A practical example comes from a student residence that reduced maintenance complaints after installing humidity sensors and advice cards. The success came not from a slogan, but from changing the everyday process. People were given a simpler route to make the better choice, and the organization measured the result. Policy also has a role. One useful approach is minimum ventilation checks during rental inspections. Such policies don't remove the need for judgment, but they make long-term thinking part of ordinary decisions rather than an optional extra. To conclude, the implication is that healthy housing depends on building design, landlord action, and resident habits working together. For students and professionals, the key lesson is to ask how a system behaves over time, who carries the cost, and which small decisions make the desired behavior easier. That's the end of part 4.